This is Adrian Paul from Highlander,
and you're listening to the Dead TV Podcast.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Dead TV Podcast's final coverage of Powerless, the one and only season they did, because it got canceled, unfortunately. And these episodes prove why it should never have gotten canceled. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight we're covering the final three episodes, 10, 11, and 12. However, it's very clear episode 12 was aired out of order based on continuity and how they end episode 11. It's very, very clear episode 12 should have been earlier in the season.
Yeah, episode 11, there's that, you know, getting together, oh, we're family, and then, you know, superpowers, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it's definitely evident that since they don't do nothing with those things in episode 12, Van of the Year, that's definitely out of order.
Which is what I think when I originally watched Van of the Year, it's because Van of the Year was supposed to be probably episodes like 3 or 4.
Mm.
Which makes a lot more sense, because episode 11 is the big, like, them almost getting bought out by LexCorp or being sold to LexCorp under President Luthor. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
Boy, are the references to Donald Trump so strong in that episode?
Well, this was put out in 2017, so...
Right, and Luthor was president back in 2000 to 2004.
Yeah?
Yeah, because of reasons I'll get into when we get there. But anyway, let's move on to No Consequence Day, Episode 10.
All right. Season 1, Episode 10, originally aired Friday, May 12th, 2017. In the wake of Lois Lane's death, Ron tells the team about a theory where Superman will rewind time to save her, and there would be no consequences. Just when everyone starts to take advantage, Ron becomes a dog owner, Emily and Wendy get in trouble with the law, Jackie takes up day drinking, Teddy makes a power move, and Van gives Bruce a piece of his mind. Things start to go awry when the theory may not be as sound as they were thinking.
Now, we open this episode with the Flash versus Superman in a race. And this actually happened. This is an actual event in the comic books. And this, in fact, has been done a couple times. A couple versions of The Flash have raced Superman. If you want to not dig out old comic books, you can look up an episode of Superman the Animated Series where Flash and Superman race for charity. This is before Michael Rosenbaum would voice The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And Weather Wizard would show up. But yeah, it's a very famous DC comic book issue. I'm looking up what issue number it is right now. The Alex Ross did a really great painting of it. Yeah, it's Superman number 199, the first Flash versus Superman race. I also believe it also took place in the Flash book itself. But this has a very famous cover of, like, who's the fastest man alive, Superman or Flash? The thing is, like, you can't make Superman faster than the Flash because then it makes the Flash seem extremely obsolete. Like, what is he even worth for if he can't be faster on foot than Superman?
Well, isn't that he touches the Speed Force?
Correct, but still, it just seems like you were going to make Superman just Flash obsolete if Superman can beat him in a foot race.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah.
Or they're of equal measure, so there's two super-powered, speedy people.
Well, on the Smallville TV show, when they had Bart Allen as the Flash, or whatever reason they used Bart Allen, they had him outrace Clark. Don't forget, this is Clark in his teens, supposedly. In teens, early, late, late teens, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, the Justice League, the Superman animated series episode, which is part of the DC animated universe that we're so fond of. Paul Dini's, you know, the one that Kevin Conroy came from. And then there's also a World's Finest issue as well. That could have been a reprint, too. World's Finest presents Superman the Flash, number 198, and then there's Superman number 199, and then there's Flash Rebirth number 3, and a lot of these are the Barry Allen Flash, FYI. So pre-crisis. So it's okay. It's happened a few times, but it's always been like a memorable kind of like. And they, by the way, they're not doing it to see who's better than the other. It's always done for charity, of course.
But who wins?
We do. Now, Lois Lane is dead, and Superman has, there's a theory by Neil deGrasse Tyson that Superman has altered time before by speeding around the Earth to save Lois's life. Gee, where have we heard this plotline before?
Isn't that in Superman?
Superman the movie with Christopher Reeve, right after Lois dies in an earthquake, being crushed to death, by the way. FYI, she's still pretty beautiful being pulled out of the rubble. I mean, Superman should be pulling out a bloody gooey mess out of that car. But anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's PG. So he pulls the corpse of Lois out of it, and Lois dies in his arms, and then he... to the heavens or whatever, and flies up to the clouds where the spirit of his father go, and the elders of Krypton say, "You are forbidden to interfere in human history." And Superman's just like, "Fuck you!" And then flies around the world, setting everything right. And then when Lois's car can't start, he lands in front of her and says, "Having problems with your engine, Lois?" Because she her car delaying started caused the caused her to be delayed from getting away from the earthquake, which killed her. So but I digress. This is a thing that actually happened. The funniest part of this whole thing is that Stephen Hawking killed Neil deGrasse Tyson in his wheelchair.
This is definitely a bizarro world.
Yes, but the fact that the reporter even reports it in a way that Hawking would talk.
Yeah.
Let's face it, if there's anything we know about Stephen Hawking from the Big Bang Theory, is that he was in on the joke about himself.
Oh, that's good.
If you ever watched episodes that he was actually on the Big Bang Theory for, they either filmed him or was on a video call, and he specifically asked to make sure his actual robotic voice little doodad that he talks through was used, he was 100% okay with the jokes they made about him. In fact, there was one in where Wolowitz creates a remote control Hawkins in a wheelchair, and they think it's really offensive until the end of the episode when Hawkins guest stars, he says, "You know what I've always wanted? A remote control wheelchair of myself as a toy."
Nice.
So,
that's good.
Yeah. So everyone thinks they can just get away with anything they want, and basically it's kind of like The Purge. So anything is, you know, okay to do because you're just going to reset time. But whereas like in The Purge, everyone just wants to commit like murder. In this, everyone just wants to fuck.
Well, it's Wendy certainly wants to. She approaches Van, and Van actually acquiesces and says, "All right, get it over with." And she kisses him straight on the mouth and goes at it.
Not my cup of tea. Neither one of them.
Oh, I like Alan. I like Alan.
Alan's okay, but he's just too goofy. I don't... There are certain men I will always say I can admit my heterosexuality and say that I think are handsome or attractive. Alan Tudyk is just too goofy.
That's why I like him. I like the goofy ones.
Your fiance must be very goofy then.
Well, my partner is definitely on the his humor is what attracted me, and I wouldn't put him as classically attractive. But, good humor and a big-sized dick really helps, you know?
Whoa! More than we needed to know. However, that is the line Jessica Rabbit gives to Eddie Valiant. Says, "What are you seeing that guy? He makes me laugh."
He makes me laugh.
Yes. Also, she's into bestiality, apparently, so. Because I guess the joke is Rabbit's like the fuck, too, you know.
Wendy apparently is into the distant relationship that Van and her have in their family tree. Because we find out in this episode that Wendy is actually a rich girl. And she comes from a family that is, their corporation is known for being extremely evil, makeup testers and whatnot. And she is distantly related to the Wayne family. And that's what makes Van so hot to her.
Ew.
I know, but it's exciting at the same time.
I guess so. I'm watching Pride and Prejudice right now. Mm-hmm. The original 1990s
BBC?
BBC. No, PBS. PBS series. Oh. The one that Colin Firth comes from. And in that, the the pastor that comes to woo away one of the oldest daughter of the rich guy who's got like four daughters and none of them are married yet. They're actually cousins. And I'm like, seriously?
Gross. It was way more common back then.
Yeah, even Jane Austen felt that way.
But I mean, when you really think about it, like the amount of people in your general pool that you have available to you back in those days was at most like 1,000 people. At most in your entire life.
I guess that's why we have
lived in a big city.
They said that's the they said one of the reasons why we have genetic anomalies to this very day. And that genetic anomaly can be anything from a deformity to your eyesight to your, you know, one boob bigger than the other, one leg a little shorter than the other, to diabetes, to whatever, is because of inbreeding going all the way back to when the population wasn't big enough.
I completely believe that.
Yeah, you know? I 100% believe. Now, obviously, the deformities could be also other things, radiation, so on and so forth, you know what I mean? But they said on a genetically chrome level, we are probably all cousins in the one way or another, if you were at least from America, you know, things like that. You know what I mean? It depends on the country, obviously. Somebody from Germany is not going to be a cousin of somebody from Japan. You know what I'm saying?
Less likely.
100% less likely. But someone from Japan is most likely a cousin to somebody who lives in Hawaii.
didn't Genghis Khan have so many progeny that it's roughly like a third of Asia has his genetics somewhere in the background there?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So I love the fact. What's the name of the Indian guy in the show?
Teddy.
Teddy. Teddy tells HR to kiss his ass.
He does.
Something we've all wanted to do.
I have actually done it once.
I haven't. My HR rep is okay. That's all.
It's very satisfying.
I think in an open door policy, you're allowed to speak your mind and tell someone to kiss your ass.
I mean, you should also expect punishment from HR if you're going to keep your job after doing that. But yeah,
depends on what they said to you. Wendy smokes weed. They spend $1,000 on something. It's just all crazy
Wendy
stuff.
Wendy stole, although she says later that she didn't steal it, but she stole $1,000 to help Emily with whatever she was doing. They got arrested for the joint that Wendy had. Jackie bails them out. Not really her high point of the day, she says.
The other plot line, which I guess is the B plot line, even though they didn't cast anybody to play him, is Bruce Wayne. Is not seen in the episode, but mentioned a lot.
Yeah, Van has a conversation on the phone with him. Basically, Bruce had canceled their meeting, their dinner. And then during the No Consequence Day, Van really tells off Bruce and like pours his heart out about like he's angry, he always admired him, and then he's a cousin, but yet you treat him like shit. And, you know, and he said, well, fuck you. He, of course, doesn't say that because that was on the station.
Yeah, he was on NBC.
You can't say the F word.
Right. But he also calls Bruce, he says, whining, boo-hoo, your parents died. And then he finds out Bruce Wayne is Batman.
He does. He finds out completely. He finds the Batcave.
Which,
on complete accident, he finds the Batcave. And he's invited, you know, via helicopter. So, of course, we never see Bruce. We just see the helicopter picking up Van and then the conversation over the telephone. So we don't even hear the voice. There's no one cast as Bruce Wayne in this episode.
No. It would have been cool if they had gotten at least Kevin Conroy maybe to play the voice of Bruce Wayne.
That would have been nice.
Because Kevin was still alive at this time, and he was, I think at this point, we were in the 2012 was when the Arrowverse started. This was 2017. So we're 5 years into the Arrowverse and 2 years away from the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was pretty much the peak of the Arrowverse with all of the shows running concurrently. So
cuteness overload, though, is Ron buys six pug puppies, and they are adorable.
They are.
And then at the end of the episode, he actually finds one left over that somehow got there, you know, through the whole rewind of time, the puppy somehow got there and has the collar on that says Ron Jr. So we know he's got a puppy at home.
the Superman that attends Lois Lane's funeral was a fake, and Superman does appear because he's trapped in the kryptonite cage. It's really funny about the whole thing because even Ron points out that for a planet that's been destroyed and a rare mineral, people sure do find a lot of kryptonite everywhere, which is 100% true. It's like, little context. At one point, they actually wrote a story where all of the kryptonite on Earth was completely made inert. And it's a storyline called Kryptonite No More. It has Superman breaking apart chains that are made of kryptonite with his, you know, they like busting them open. Because all the kryptonite on Earth was completely made inert. It was no more kryptonite. It basically had just run its course. I mean, this is the 80s, by the way. So Superman's been around for 50 years and they've been doing the kryptonite plotline. Then the Crisis on Infinite Earths happened. And there was just one chunk of kryptonite. It's in Metallo. And Luthor has it. And he chisels it down, gets rid of it, and fashions it into a ring so he can keep Superman at bay. Of course, little does he know, kryptonite has a 1% low-level radiation that if exposed to it for enough time, you can develop cancer. And that's what happened to Luthor. He had to have his hand chopped off.
Wow.
Yeah. Eventually, of course, having the hand chopped off did not save his life, and the cancer had already spread into his bloodstream.
Oh, nasty.
And one of the reasons why they created Doomsday, the monster that killed Superman, is because they didn't want Superman to be taken out by a rock.
Okay.
Yeah, but I digress. Yeah, kryptonite has been overused. It's still in the comics. Obviously, it's going to be used because Metallo has it powering him, and it's one of the two things that can stop Superman. Technically, it's one of three things. It's kryptonite, it's magic.
Magic.
And anything from Krypton can stop Superman. That's the one thing they always keep forgetting, because General Zod could stop Superman. But I digress.
That's all the notes I have for this episode.
That's all the notes I have for this episode, too. We're going to take a quick break so we can plug in this great podcast that covers a lot of stuff that Powerless talks about over on the Fire and Water Network. They do a show that talks about the who's who of the DC Universe, run by the Irredeemable Shag and Rob. So go check them out. If you ever want to know anything about any of the characters we have mentioned on this show, they have covered them in exhaustive nauseam on that 12-year-old podcast covering every single character DC Comics had created up to, I think, the present day. And by present day, I mean 2025, because they do update profiles as well. Pretty unbelievable stuff. We'll be back.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and JMD Mateus. We started with the very first issue, and our coverage goes all the way through breakdowns. We're going issue by issue in release order, tackling two comics per episode, both a Justice League America issue and a Justice League Europe issue. Now, along the way, we're also taking time out for special episodes covering the quarterly book, interviews with various comic book creators, discussing the plethora of spin-off series, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and more. And when we're all done, we'll wrap up our coverage by looking at the 2003 and 2005 stories formerly known as the Justice League, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as
Batman,
Martian Manhunter,
Captain Atom,
Fire, Ice,
Rocket Red,
The Flash,
The Elongated Man,
Maxwell Lord,
Elrond,
Power Girl,
Renard Russe, I mean, Crimson Fox,
Guy Gardner,
Metamorpho,
Booster Gold,
Blue Beetle,
Nort!
Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
And we're back. Now, Misha Zeneca, out of all of the swaggy comic book related stuff you own, what's your biggest DC comic collection stuff since this is the final episode that we're covering a DC comic show for now?
Ooh, DC.
By the way, we have covered two other DC comic shows. Do you remember what they are?
Don't pop quiz me.
We covered, not pop quizzing you. You should remember.
Well, I don't think Spawn is DC.
Nope, Spawn is Image Comics. Constantine.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Swamp Thing,
the animated stuff.
And Swamp Thing, the animated series.
Yeah, you're right.
So, part of the Vertigo expansion of DC Comics, but still in the larger DC universe. So, again, do you have anything that's super-duper DC related?
To answer your previous question,
yeah.
I do. I have a piece of artwork that was created for me by one of the animators for Batman the Animated Series.
Which animator?
So basically, I don't remember his name.
Oh.
I have it in my collection of autographs. And so one of the things I do at conventions, I love getting autographs and pieces of art from people. So on the back of one of the comic book boards, he drew Batman and signed it for me. And so I have it in my collection amongst my lots and lots of autographs that I have, including a fully signed autograph poster from the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, neat. Yeah. Wow. The band of the Big Bang Theory, which was I almost said they might be giants, but no, it's the theme song for the Big Bang Theory, you mean? Bare Naked Ladies. The Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you said the band of the Big Bang Theory. That would be
No. The band as in the group of them. The band of brothers and plus Penny. You know. So the grouping of them, the entire cast.
Oh, okay. My biggest DC comic thing to date is I still have it on my YouTube channel and everyone can go listen to it. I had Paul Dini on the show, who is responsible for the creation of Harley Quinn and one of the co-creators of the DC animated universe that we know and love. Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, the Justice League the Animated Series, and Batman Beyond. So he came on my show because I was so nice to his wife, Misty Lee, who was a actual magician that looks like Zatanna.
Ooh.
Fishnets and all. He loved Zatanna so much, he married a real-life one. I'm not even kidding. I ain't kidding in the slightest. That is a guy who loves Zatanna. He married a real life one. I mean, that is some dedication to your what you're into.
Got good taste, you
know?
Yeah.
Oh, she is beautiful. So, but I digress. My biggest DC comic thing that I can think of off the top of my head, I do have a couple signed comics here and there, but is recently, as of December, I paid it off, The Colossal 12-volume book set hardcover of the Crisis on Infinite Earths box set. It contains every single Crisis crossover story leading up to the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was the mega-shattering DC event which changed everything, you know, to this very day, and all of the ancillary crossover tie-in issues. Again, 14 hardcover volumes in one box set.
Wow, what did that set you back?
This originally retailed for $500 when it came out, and it came out in 2018, 2019, when the Crisis on Infinite Earths a crossover event happened on the Arrowverse, which was between Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, DC Legends, Black Lightning, Batwoman, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And I had always wanted one, but once the thing sold out, it started going pretty high, even used copies sold pretty high. This comic book store had one, sold to me for $225.
Ooh.
They'd had it for so long, they were just like, yeah, it's a little damaged, so if you don't mind. I was like, no, I don't care. So I paid it off, got it, $225.
Nice.
Yeah. Marvel put out one as well, big old box set containing the entire Infinity Saga. So it's all of the Infinity crossover tie-ins, Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, Infinity Gauntlet, and stuff like that. Now, I have all most of those issues in individual floppies, but I wouldn't mind that box set if I can get it for a decent price. But I didn't have most of this Crisis stuff in this set. All I had was the original 12-issue miniseries. So that's my biggest thing. And my biggest thing, I mean, it's like the size of a monitor of a computer.
I'd imagine, because that's a lot of content.
It's so much content, and I'm still working my way through it right now. I'm on the Crisis Infinite-Earths crossover, but I'm reading it in the actual order, which is in one of the other volumes that tells you how to read it with all the tie-ins.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot of tie-ins, and there's some I'm skipping because it's kind of like, this only has anything to do with the Crisis because they mentioned the Crisis. I like the stuff that has like, oh, this was like a couple panels in the main book and they switched over to another part of the story, but those couple panels are actually in an entire issue in that character's own book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's move on to the next episode, which involves Diabolical Lex Luthor.
Powerless, Season 1, Episode 11, Win Luthor Draw. Originally aired Friday, June 16th, 2017. When an alien attack damages the Gotham headquarters, Chairman West delivers some unfortunate news to Van and Emily. In an effort to save the company, Emily's efficiency may make everyone a target. Meanwhile, Jackie gets a shocking surprise that will change her life.
Now, this episode, Win, Lose, or Draw, is actually what it comes from, is based on the fact that at this point in comic book history, Lex Luthor was not president of the United States anymore. Luthor became president in 2000 when Gore and Bush were running for president. Do you remember the good old days when a presidency wasn't a bunch of bullcrap?
When our presidency wasn't up for sale and he's not doing car salesman bits on the White House lawn and sponsorships from corporations for the White House egg roll. Yeah, I miss those days.
Or he's not causing wars with other countries over tariffs and things like that. You know, I'll take a war against the Iraq and their weapons of mass destruction any day over what we got going on right now. Yeah. Anyway, but Lex Luthor was president for 4 years. Pete Ross, Superman's pal from his high school days, was vice president. And he was president up until the storyline called Public Enemies, where he decides that it's time to take out Superman and Batman once and for all. And in doing so, goes after them full throttle, nearly gets them killed, goes crazy, goes after him themselves, and gets publicly dismissed. It's not a good look for the American people, by the way. But he gets taken down, but because of, like, once, you know, his great lawyers, he gets away with it. But it's acknowledged once in a while that he was once president. But yeah, Luthor is president. The fact that you even point out in this episode that the GOP failed to indict President Luthor because of his stupidity scheme.
I mean, that's so accurate!
Oh my god, it was unbelievable!
It becomes more accurate as time goes on. Oh, my God. This was put out in 2017. This was before Trump's two impeachments and before the GOP in this current administration just turns over belly up and is just allowing all of this to happen. So, yes, it is completely accurate. I saw that news broadcast on this episode, and I was like, you know what? It hurts.
I can imagine you might have a little bit more feelings about this than I do, but we're not going to turn this into a giant political show about, like, being against President Trump, because
we're talking about powerless.
Powerless. It is hilarious that we don't get Lex Luthor in this episode, but the time we're recording this is a sad moment a couple weeks ago. Of course, you know who we lost in real life. Who prayed and played Luthor for three films.
Oh, yes, Gene Hackman.
Hackman? Do you remember that from South Park?
Yeah, Hackman.
Yeah, Hackman? Yeah, there's a South Park episode where Christopher Reeve sucks on the fetus of a dead baby so he can walk again. Holy cow. And his enemy trying to stop him from doing it is Gene Hackman, who he calls Hackman?
Yep.
But yes, Gene Hackman, in one of the most tragic ways possible, didn't just die. His wife died of cancer, or liver failure, I believe, right? Liver failure? Kidney failure.
From the hantavirus.
Yeah. And then he had Alzheimer's, so he didn't probably even remember his wife, forgot to take his meds, died, and then his dog ate his meds and died as well. That's what the suspicions around it was so weird, because they said two of the dogs were still alive, but one dog was dead. What is that about? Was there foul play? Did she kill him and kill herself?
No.
It's just shit circumstances. They lived kind of isolated too, because people are always like, well, why didn't someone check on him? She was 60-something years old. She was perfectly fine to be able to take care of her 90-something-year-old husband. But it just, it sucks. It's unfortunate. The legacy of Gene Hackman is unfortunately over. And honestly, the last major actor from the Superman franchise, other than the Mark McClure, who played Jimmy Olsen, and the actor who played General Zod, Terrence Stamp, are still with us.
Okay.
So. But on to this episode's happier times.
So in this episode, Emily had spent her entire savings to buy a condo, only for it to be destroyed before the opening credits.
Yeah, that was hilarious. She's just like, I just bought a condo, yay! And then she's like, it's over there where that ship's flying. And then I knew as soon as I saw that ship coming in, it was going to destroy her condo. And then, of course, they get to the destroyed apartment. And what is the line that Ron says? Oh, nice view.
Yeah, Wendy says that's why I rent.
It's an open window, like look at how like natural light coming in. Oh my god!
But surprisingly, her condo is very, very tiny because they only show the one room. It's almost like it was supposed to be a corner penthouse, but the room that they are standing in is so small that it couldn't have been like a very large condo because it seemed like a studio apartment that had been destroyed.
It's unfortunate. It's hilarious that Luther Corp wants to buy out Wayne Tech, and we get our biggest guest star of the series, Adam West, playing Chairman Wayne. Not necessarily Bruce Wayne, but Chairman Wayne.
Chairman Wayne, yes.
Yes, and of course Adam West played Bruce Wayne in 1966 Batman TV show, which ran for 3 seasons, and the Batman the movie, as well as the 2 animated film tie-ins. Did you ever see those? The Batman: The Return of the Caped Crusaders and Batman versus Two-Face?
I did see those.
Yeah, and Two-Face in that movie was played by William Shatner.
Adam West has a lot of stories from back in the day where he'd be kicked out of orgies for staying in character.
Adam West was kind of a dick to people at Rhode Island Comic Con before he died. He was there for signings. A lot of fans said that he wouldn't take pictures with anyone dressed as Christian Bale's Batman, or he found his way out of it. Like, he didn't say that, but they definitely felt like he was trying to get away from those pictures. And he was like 35 minutes late to his panel and then left 20 minutes early.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, was not impressed with him whatsoever. You know, whatever, legacy aside, just kind of a dick to fans the one time I actually had a chance to interact with him.
I have never met Adam West, so I have missed that opportunity.
Well, if you die, you'll get a chance to meet Adam West because he's dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if he is going to the same place I am.
Oh, well, it depends, I guess, what you believe in. But, yes. Adam West has left this mortal coil, the first of the Batman to die, I guess, not counting the serials, or then the second one being Kevin Conroy.
So in this episode, Adam West does 2 breaking of the fourth wall bits,
yep.
But it's played off like he's actually talking to a houseplant, or like, what's he looking at?
Oh my god.
What's he talking to?
I didn't know if they were trying to do a... What's the cartoon on Fox? Adam West was the mayor of the town.
Oh, American Dad.
No, the other one. Family Guy.
Oh, Family Guy. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because they also, don't forget, they rename James Woods High School Adam West. Sam Elliott plays Adam West's brother on the show, and he takes over as mayor of Quahog.
It's been such a long time since I've really watched Family Guy. I
don't even know if Family Guy's even on anymore with The Simpsons, because they're apparently just doing like specials on Disney Plus now. But
yeah.
I digress. Adam West's portrayal of Mayor West on that show was like the way he is in this episode, is where I was trying to go.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll have to take a watch of those episodes.
Yeah, any episode he's in, he acts just like the way he does in this one.
Okay. In this episode, he does call Emily Catwoman, which is pretty hilarious, you know, because she's wearing a cat sweater that Wendy gave her as a dress, and he calls her Catwoman for it. I wonder if that was just because someone on the production team wanted Adam West to say the word Catwoman.
Maybe. I also do love that we get to meet their, like, doppelgangers, and it's kind of funny that her doppelganger is pretty white compared to Vanessa Hutchinson, who I think is his Latino or Hispanic, right?
I don't know. I'd have to look that one up.
Yeah, I thought she was at least of not the white kind of. And it's just funny because what does her coworker say? You're mostly white. You'll be fine. You're petite and mostly white. You'll be fine.
Her father is from Missouri and Illinois, and her mother is from the Philippines.
Okay, so she's Filipino.
Yes.
Okay, so mostly white. It's just, it's very funny that her coworker is just like, you're petite and mostly white, you'll be fine.
Well, the doppelganger for her, the character's name is Emma, and she's played by Stella Hudgens. I believe she's...
I also didn't realize Vanessa Hudgens was in the last few Bad Boy films. Did you know that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was like, where has she been lately? Oh, she was in Bad Boys, in Bad Boys 3 and 4.
Looks like Stella was in 5 episodes of the show Players, and more recently... Actually, that is the most recent. That was in 2020.
This entire episode once again proves why this show should have been more successful than it was.
Because of the kind of wacky goings-on that take place?
Correct. You know, you don't have to be a hardcore DC Comics fan like me to know all of the ins and outs and little references that they're making to get into it. It was just still enough that this should have lasted longer.
It was just put out in a time where... You know, it was at the start of the superhero takeoff, but because it hadn't gotten the ball rolling, I think the show would have done much better had it been put out in, like, 2020.
2020 is when the pandemic happened.
Yes, I know. And people would have been stuck on their couches watching TV.
I don't think so. I mean, this was the height. Okay, so think about this. In 2016 and 2017, we got... Captain America: Civil War, Wonder Woman, the Justice League movie. We were on the edge of the Avengers: Infinity War film coming out.
Between
2010 and 2020 would have been fine. At 2020, unfortunately, I mean nothing came out. But 2021, that's when the superhero genre really took a nosedive. With the highlight exceptions like WandaVision, Spider-Man: No Way Home, Guardians of the Galaxy. But let's face it, it's been a rough ride for superheroes the last 4 years.
Certainly the last 4 years.
Correct.
But...
I mean, there's highlights here and there, but the highlights aren't being watched by enough people to positivity that we need. Superman and Lois, highlight. Stargirl, highlight.
Then I retract my previous statement, and I say that perhaps it just wasn't promoted very well.
It was not promoted very well, and it was on the wrong network entirely.
Well, in this episode, we get past the Emily's condo getting smashed bit, and we start to get into what is actually causing the chaos in the city. You know, these aliens have come through a wormhole, and no one knows where this wormhole is. And by the end of the episode, our group has found the wormhole. And it was predictably... on Lex Luthor's property.
It's very funny. This wormhole is like in the middle of Luthor Core or Lex Core, depending on which version it is. I think it's Lex Core in this episode, right?
Yes, it's Lex Core.
Because it was originally called Luthor Core, but he wanted his first name as the title of the company. but I digress. Because I actually thought that was a boob tube. You know what a boom tube is?
A TV?
No, boom tube. Boom. Sorry, boom tube.
Oh.
Not boob tube. Boom tube. Boom tubes are created from mother boxes. Mother boxes are technology of the New Gods, a.k.a. like Darkseid, Apocalypse, High Father, Orion, those characters.
Okay.
It's a device that you use to transport yourself through time to someplace else. In the Snyderverse, they were like the MacGuffin, kind of like the Infinity Gauntlet, because literally they needed to do the Avengers and hurry up and do it fast, because they were already so late to that. So, yeah, for anyone listening, it's just like, boom tube was in Jack Snyder's Justice League. And that was not what a boom tube is. Anyone has a boom tube in the DC universe, it just transports you from one place to the other.
So the major LexCorp employee that we see is played by Rory Scovel. And he was in, more recently... the movie Babylon. He also plays some miscellaneous voices on Kite Man, hell yeah.
And Babylon stars Harley Quinn actor Margot Robbie.
Yeah. Yeah. He was also on Grace and Frankie, Black Monday.
Never seen it.
The movie show
Never
for
seen
five
it.
Episodes.
Never seen it.
And Robbie,
Can't watch everything.
And Miscellaneous Voices on Harley Quinn as well.
Okay. Harley Quinn, yes, I've watched. I'm a little behind on it. Last episode I watched was the episode where Brainiac and his Brainiac's trying to connect with his son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. So I'm a few episodes behind on that one. And I haven't watched all of Kite Man, so.
So this LexCorp employee is going to kill our Trepid crew because they found the portal. They found the wormhole, and now they gotta die. But in the meantime, Jackie, with her newfound super speed, saves them.
Correct.
And it's never mentioned again after this episode.
Yeah, unfortunately. Because if you pay attention to the writing of the episode, this should have been the season finale. But they aired them out of order, and I did find that out to be true. So the next episode, which is Van of the Year... I watched because the DVD set that I have that was created not to be sold, but just to have a DVD set, so it's not a bootleg, they put the episodes in the actual chronological order they're supposed to be.
Ah, okay.
So let's move on to the next one, unless you have more notes about this one.
No more notes about this one.
All right, Van of the Year.
Van
the final
of the year.
Episode.
Last one. Season 1, Episode 12, Van of the Year, originally aired Friday, May 26, 2017. Emily deals with Van stealing credit for her generosity at the office. Meanwhile, Teddy pushes Ron to get his new invention to the masses.
So, this episode is kind of hilarious because it spotlights how bad of a person Van Wayne is.
Yes. Yes and no. It's like, he is trying... In this episode,
bastard.
He teaches Emily that taking credit is something that you should strive for. You should take credit for things. And because she wasn't going to take credit, he takes credit. He takes credit for everything that she does, and she gets pissed off about it, even though she herself is saying with her voice that, oh, it doesn't matter. It's for you. It's not for me. I shouldn't want the credit. But... she is steaming with rage because she's not getting any credit for this party for a retiring employee, Alma. Alma has her hand kind of transformed into a tentacle for most of the episode. And all of these kind of going away parties and I wouldn't say fundraiser or anything, but events for Alma that Emily throws, and somehow the company kind of recognizes the effort, and then Van takes credit. So he is teaching her that you should take credit, and you should speak up for it whenever you have the opportunity to. And he's kind of leading by example, but he is a piss-poor person to actually do that, because his need to actually have that credit is so heavy in his life that's all that he can really do is to get credit for everyone else's work and, you know, rise to the top because he's a Wayne. But yeah, it's he's bad, but he's not bad. It's very balanced.
We also get Deanna Russo returning as Crimson Fox, which, by the way, didn't Crimson Fox leave in a previous episode? That's why we got Green Fury.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. There. These are completely out of order on a lot of how they aired and everywhere else, because Crimson Fox left the show after, you know, being in it for like 3 episodes, but she moved on to another city because she joined the Justice League International.
That's true.
And we got Green Fury, which is fire, basically. So Deanna Russo is in this episode as Crimson Fox, but again, out of order. We also have Sandra Purpura as Gail Simone. She's mentioned once as Gail, but this is supposed to be Gail Simone. Gail Simone is a longtime comic book writer, wrote Birds of Prey, Superman, Justice League, and is now currently the writer of Uncanny X-Men.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's probably the most well-known female writer in comic books. She had an extended, lengthy stint on Red Sonja.
Wow.
Which, anyone always complaining about the way women are drawn in comics or whatever, Gail Simone has no problem with the way Red Sonja is drawn in the comics. She kept her in the chainmail bikini, so the hell with you. I'm just saying, you had a woman write a character. She could have written a costume on her, but guess what? Nope. You don't mess with what works. Chainmail bikini for the win.
Well, one of our other characters in this episode, the one where the episode kind of revolves around, Alma, is played by Megan Fay. And Megan Fay was on the movie Magnolia as Dr. Deanne, on Barton Fink as Poppy, and from the television show Loot, she was on there as Rhonda for 19 episodes between 2022 and 2024.
I remember her because I just did a rewatch of it. The Big Bang Theory, she is Bernadette's mother.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she's Bernadette's mother for a couple episodes. Her father appeared more often on the show than the mom did. The mom was only in like one or two episodes. But she's had a lengthy career in just being a bit part actress. She's been on The Rugrats. She's been on Darman Greg, Nash Bridges.
2 and a Half Men, Murphy Halloween
Brown.
2.
Yeah, Halloween 2, she was a deputy. Roseanne, The Carol Burnett Show.
According to Jim,
30-something. Alienation, which we covered. She was Coroner Barkley on Alienation. I don't, unfortunately, remember her. And that, we're talking like 30 years between the episodes, so she probably looks a little different 30 years ago. Hell, I look a little different from 4 months ago as I lost 22 pounds.
Ooh, congratulations.
Type 2 diabetes will do that to you.
Oh.
But I was at 197 pounds. I had an A1C at 9.6. Do you know what an A1C is?
Sugar thing?
Yep, you're right. It's your sugar in your level. It's your sugar in your blood, what your sugar level is in your blood. I was at 9.6, which is very high. Very high. It's now down to a 6.8.
That's good.
Yeah. My cholesterol, though, is still over 114.
Oh, I am healthy as a horse, with the exception of some neurological stuff.
Well, we all knew we were crazy. It's okay. she was on Freaks and Geeks, too, which is funny, because right now I'm watching Shrinking, which is honestly my new favorite show of all time. Why? Because Harrison Ford's on it. That's all that matters. It's a show about a group of psychologists, you know, in their office and their lives around it. The main character is Jason Segel, who is recovering from the death of his wife, which left him a widower and father to his becoming an adult teenage daughter. So, and it's just about their lives and how they deal with their patients. But the head of the office is Harrison Ford.
Okay.
And he is as curmudgeon-y as you can imagine him to be, but he is so much fun on that show. So, I digress.
Villain of this episode is called the Sea Troll. Yeah, I did a preliminary lookup, and I couldn't find anything for this. So I think this is a made-up character for the show.
Which is really funny, considering how many DC comic characters they have access to, including the B-level, Z-level ones. They had to make one up. It's like, seriously? You couldn't have used, like, Ocean Master or something? But, you know, whatever. The Aquaman movie was getting in development, so maybe they couldn't use somebody that was going to be in a film.
So does any of them use a transmorphic beam? Because that's what changed her regular hand into a tentacle for most of this episode.
No, but there is a creature called a sea troll in, like, mythology. It's just funny that there isn't an actual Aquaman villain called Sea Troll. You think that would be an Aquaman villain? Of all the characters, Aquaman would have a villain called Sea Troll. and you know what? You can even do it like he's a troll that lives in the sea, right? How hard would that be? New Aquaman writers, I just wrote you some great material. There's a new Aquaman comic book out there. I'm just saying.
I wouldn't say it's great, but...
Think about it. Aquaman needs villains, too. Trolls exist, so why not have a sea troll?
Okay. Yeah, I think you got to work on that Type 5 a little bit better.
No, nope. Sea Troll is the name of the villain. He's a big, brutish character Aquaman has to fight. So, nya.
All right.
Moving on.
So the B storyline of this episode is that Ron has developed a drone that takes selfies, but it's controlled by your brain waves. So your confidence, your thoughts control the drone so that it will take the perfect picture of you when you are feeling your most confident, your most happy, your best foot forward, as you will.
Uh-huh.
But that also works in reverse because later on when he's about to talk to someone that could actually have power to give him money to make his product to market, he loses his confidence, and the drone just falls right out of the sky. But in this whole thing, like, Teddy is trying to get him to market his product. Like, this is such a good drone. This is such a good concept. You know, he even takes the helmet that he had for the drone controls and turns it into a tiny little earbud so that you can control it and it looks great, etc. But Ron is really only interested in bringing his product to market just to make Teddy happy. You know, Ron is really happy where he is in his job. He loves what he does. And so he just wants to make Teddy happy. And so Ron is happy when Teddy is happy. And they have a nice little, you know, guy pal relationship on that. And it's a good bonding moment in this episode.
So here is where I found the information to be correct. Van of the Year was originally scheduled to air as Powerless Episode 6. However, the episode was pulled and replaced by a rerun of a different show because the show had been canceled at this point. Powerless episode Van of the Year never aired in the United States. It aired only on NBC.com and in New Zealand.
Wow.
Yep. So that's why it's considered the 12th episode. But it was pulled because of the fact the show had gotten canceled by episode 5. Which is usually a lot of times when you're going to hear a show to get canceled. It will get canceled like pretty much right when it starts airing. Yeah.
That's sad because I feel the show needs to breathe, you know, a little bit.
I mean, okay, call Netflix. How many times have they canceled crap that people beloved?
Oh, I know. Like, the one show that I wish that Netflix would bring back is I Am Not Okay With This.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Dark Shadows. Damn it, Dark Crystal.
Yes, Dark Crystal 2. We're going to be covering that next.
But we could also be covering another Netflix show coming up, I think, in the future. Cowboy Bebop got canceled after one season. And it got canceled before the episode even started. Based on the anime cartoon.
I don't do anime.
You don't need to. It's a live-action show.
Yeah.
No, we're going to totally do it. It was awesome. It was so awesome. It was just like the
not
cartoon. Anyway. So, do you have more notes for this episode?
Let's see.
I don't.
The object that the sea troll is trying to get is Blackbeard's sword. And it's almost mentioned as kind of like an in-passing type of thing. Because the gala that they take the huge ceremony to give Van the key to the city is taking place in a pirate museum exhibit. The whole object that the sea troll is looking to get, Blackbeard's sword... I don't know. I kind of wish it was more integrated into the plot line a little bit, because it's, I don't know, interesting. Never mind me.
That's fine. And this is the end of the show, unfortunately. We don't get anything else. There was nothing that came out after it. There was no, like, fan demand. It just kind of died badly. If this had been on the CW, it probably would have done better. I mean, a lot of people would have asked, is it part of the Arrowverse? They could have made that connection. It's kind of like... Don't forget what we got after this. Harley Quinn started over on the DC channel before it became Max. And also, other shows like Harley Quinn, like Star Trek Below Decks started. And this is very much like a live-action version of Lower Decks, or Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
I think it could have done well on a different network, because both Harley Quinn and Lower Decks survived the pandemic. And the writer's strike.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, wouldn't have affected it because animation wasn't affected by the writer's strike. Those shows are very much like this one. You know what I mean? It's a comedic universe of a serious universe. Marvel tried it too, by the way. They did one season of a show called MODOK, which was terrible, honestly. If you know who MODOK was, he was the villain.
Oh, yeah.
Had
Patton Oswalt play MODOK.
Yeah. Yes. And Bobby would have been better. That would have been 1,000 times better MODOK than the one we got in the Ant-Man movie. Ugh.
I didn't even see that one.
Don't even see it. Because don't forget, they don't even have Jonathan Majors anymore because he got canceled pretty fast after his stupidity. And being replaced by Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom. Yay! But anyway, I didn't move on. So... But we're going to be taking a break for about a month, and then going to be starting Dark Crystal based on the movie, but a prequel to the movie. This is Mr. Zeneca's big show. She's going to get us everyone involved in the show that was ever on the show and the original movie, and including Brian Henson, right?
Okay, well, all right. I will do my best. you know, because puppeteers rarely get invites to be interviewed. So I'm hoping that everyone jumps on my request.
Good.
But I am very excited. You know, we do say that we cover sci-fi, horror, and fantasy, and we rarely do fantasy. So this is a good, nice-sized fantasy for us to cover.
And it's a puppet show, too.
Huh?
And it's a puppet show, too, which we've never done.
Yes, yes. I love puppets. I love Muppets. I love the entire Froud family that worked on this. So Brian Froud, for those that don't know, Brian Froud is the person that did a lot of the artwork for the inspiration for the movie Labyrinth, His Little Goblins.
Cool.
His wife actually created a lot of the costuming and the character design for The Dark Crystal. And then their son Toby, which was the baby in Labyrinth, is a puppeteer in his own right. He does a lot of performance art as well. And so he also worked on the Dark Crystal television show.
Excellent.
So the amount of talent on this show is just so intense. I want to interview them. And hopefully we will take our break, stockpiling interviews and whatnot, so that we can have a nice, good selection of content for each of our upcoming episodes, plus the movie, because we will be doing that as well.
Definitely. You can, don't forget, you can find us over on the Dead TV Podcast on Facebook and send us emails at RadioHorror@gmail.com. I did have a couple emails. I will pull them up and I'll read them in a later on. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our coverage of Powerless and coming back for the show after a bit hiatus after Werewolf the series. And we'll be back with Dark Shadows.
Not Dark Shadows.
Dark Crystal, damn it.
Dark Crystal.
Ah!
I'm going to have to slap your hand every time you do that.